This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Mental Wellness. My name is Tanya Andrix, and I'm from Crossing Healthcare. And Crossing Healthcare is a federally qualified health center, and our mission is to provide high-quality, comprehensive care to medically underserved populations. We're also very in tune to our community. And we want to make sure that we're taking a look at our community and making sure that we're doing things to meet the needs of our community. And right now, we're well into the winter and we're well into almost a year of this pandemic. And what we know is that this has taken a toll on many people's mental health. And so in order to get more comprehensive information and practical information into the hands of people in our community, we decided to start the series Mental Wellness. So we're really glad that you're joining us. Today, we're going to talk about anxiety, and I'm really excited to have with me two of the therapists here at Crossing Healthcare. We have Charmaine Robinson-Stoner, who is a licensed clinical social worker and has our chief of behavioral health here at Crossing Healthcare. And we have Rachel Brown, who's a licensed or a professional counselor here at Crossing Healthcare. And she works all the time with our substance use patients and really has a special focus on anxiety and mindfulness and some of the things we're going to talk about today. So I'm really excited to get the conversation started. Hello, everyone. Hi, Charmaine.
Hello. Hi, Tini. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm excited that you're here, and I'm excited that we're going to have a conversation about anxiety. I think that it's probably one of the most referred to of all of the sort of terms that describe an emotional state. I think a lot of people will tell you they have anxiety, whether they're diagnosed or not. I think that the world we live in, because it's so fast paced and the fact that we consume a lot of caffeine, has a lot of people feeling anxious a lot. And so I hear anxiety, I hear about it all the time, but Charmaine, could you start us off by just describing or defining what anxiety really is?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think that's a really fair statement that, you know, many of us kind of use the term anxiety frequently now, right? So a part of that is kind of cool that we've sort of destigmatized the language. But the other part of that means that maybe, you know, several of us don't have an actual diagnosis. When we're talking about a disorder or diagnosis, we're talking about an impact on functioning. And we're also talking about these sort of experiences occurring more times than not. So this is a frequent occurrence. This is not, you know, I have this test coming up and so I'm feeling kind of anxious about it and I'm just going to call that test anxiety. So I totally have anxiety, right? No, it's like, that's very specific to that experience. What we're talking about is, you know, folks who experience anxiety, and depending on the severity, they will tell you that at times this could become very debilitating for them. So this might mean, you know, frequent thoughts racing everywhere, thoughts all over the place, pretty scattered, tangential, just kind of circumstantial thoughts all over the place. Worrying about specific things, about different things, about everything. And then, you know, when you add all of these things together, it's sort of this sense of inability to function. So maybe I'm struggling at work. Maybe I'm, you know, I'm struggling to focus on the task at hand because my brain is everywhere and nowhere at all. Maybe I'm struggling to be present with my family and things to that nature as well. And then for some folks, when we're speaking of anxiety, we're talking about physical symptoms as well. So again, you speak with someone who's experienced features or symptoms of anxiety, they might be saying, you know, I feel this in my stomach and my gut. I can feel my body tensing up. My heart is sort of racing, or I'm sweating, or I'm shaking. There's a physical sensation as well. And so it's not just, you know, in the moment I'm feeling stressed about this thing. Certainly we might have, you know, anxious feelings and features, but we're talking about a total impact on functioning.
So, Charmaine, I have always sort of looked at most things are on a continuum. So, you know, we've talked about depression and we talked about how there's the blues all the way to clinical depression. And so what I think I hear you saying is you can have feelings of anxiousness because of events and of things. And certainly right now with this pandemic, there was a lot of that early on. But an anxiety disorder, or really tackling anxiety in your everyday life, that means this is having a significant impact on your functionality, your ability to function. Did I hear you correctly when you said that?
You absolutely did. Absolutely.
So real quickly, how do we differentiate anxiety from depression, and do they often go together? That's a question that I think I hear a lot.
Yeah, I'll chime in first and then we can hear from Rachel. But yeah, so when we talk about anxiety and depression, first of all, we want to note that it is possible for them to coexist, right, within one person. So a person can be diagnosed with a major depressive disorder, or what we used to refer to clinicians as dysthymia, which is now referred to as persistent pervasive depressive disorder, which essentially means I've been experiencing symptoms of depression for at least 2 years ongoing, right? So there's the diagnostic criteria in the DSM-5 for us. And then that person can also be experiencing and or be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. For example, a generalized anxiety disorder. And, you know, as clinicians, then we would sort of screen them and sort of help to determine, A, is this even present for me right now? And then if it is, where do I sort of fall on the severity rating? And that's mild, moderate, and severe is usually what we're thinking about. For anxiety, and not to say that any of these features don't sort of overlap, but for anxiety, we think about worrying. There's lots of worrying going on. Maybe there's a flood of thoughts. Potentially, I want to avoid whatever that trigger looks like for me. So I've had a number of patients say a big store sort of makes me super anxious. And we sort of talk about that. Now, oftentimes what we know is rooted in anxiety is this sort of loss of control, or this fear like I'm out of control in this moment. Anything could happen. And their brain literally does go and sort of fill in the blanks of all of the possible like awful things that can happen, which is really overwhelming. For depression, oftentimes we see intense or extreme feelings of hopelessness or helplessness, you know, just feeling like it's not going to get better. For both of them, with depression and anxiety, I think we notice rumination. So like kind of thinking about some of the same things over and over and over again. I think a very simple way to distinguish the difference between the two would be depression oftentimes is rooted in the past, things that have happened, maybe things that we can't change, and sort of ruminating over that. And anxiety is often rooted in the future, the fear of ... what could happen.
That's a really good way to put it. Rachel, anything you want to add?
I was just, as soon as Charmaine said fear of ... I was like, yes, that's perfect.
Yeah. And I think for everybody, it's different because we all have different lived experiences. So the things that we're going to be fearful of, you know, can vary. I think for the purpose of this conversation, we're really thinking about mild to moderate anxiety, don't you think? Because when it gets into severe anxiety, that's really when you want to involve your family practice doctor or a clinician to help you, even perhaps with medication, which we're not going to talk about today because we, quite frankly, don't have time. We're going to talk about the non-medical interventions for things like anxiety. But would you think it's fair to say today we're talking about mild to moderate anxiety? So, Rachel, how would you define what's the limit of what is mild and moderate? And then at what point, if you're experiencing X, this is more severe, so that when people are listening to this, they understand sort of at what point they maybe need to absolutely seek medical help. Rachel, you want to get us started on that first?
Sure, yeah. So when we're looking at mild to moderate generalized anxiety, you know, we want to first, as clinicians, we want to start to look at, you know, the DSM, the criteria. How many symptoms are they experiencing? So with mild anxiety, you know, maybe 2 to 3, moderate 3 to 4, severe, anything over that. So
I'm sorry, give me an example of a symptom.
Yeah. So, for anxiety, symptoms can vary. One symptom can be, like Charmaine said, racing thoughts, ruminating thoughts. We're constantly thinking about something, the fear of what's to come. When we look at severe anxiety, it becomes debilitating, just like Charmaine said. It starts affecting our daily lives, you know, to the point where anxiety can lead to other issues such as agoraphobia, those kind of things, where we stop going places, or our anxiety is so debilitating that we begin to have panic attacks, or, you know, we can't function, those kind of things. So Charmaine, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. And I think, you know, when we talk about panic attacks and anxiety attacks, you know, again, talk to someone who's experienced a panic attack. And what they will tell you is that in that moment, you know, they really thought maybe they were having a heart attack, you know, for some of them. One of the things that I think we have to do as not only as clinicians, but even as family members and friends, is to help, and as our, you know, to ourselves as well. Let's be kind to ourselves. We have to normalize that experience. So one thing that we know to be true is when our body is experiencing, you know, symptoms associated with panic or anxiety, or we experience a panic attack, truly what's happening is that our body is trying to protect us. Your body is actually trying to protect you. So your body's doing everything that it would do in a normal fight or flight mode, right? Okay, now we're gonna, okay, heart racing, sweating, palpitations. These are things that your body naturally does and says, okay, we need to protect you. So one of the things that I do as a therapist is I'm speaking with my patients who may or may not experience panic attacks is, in that moment, I need you to breathe, of course, ground yourself, you know, feet planted on the ground, and remind your body, I don't need your protection in this moment. Yeah. I've got this. I don't need your protection in this moment. And say it until you believe it. Because your body is just trying to naturally sort of protect us.
That's really excellent advice. You know, that's really practical advice to how to deal with a panic attack. Charmaine, thank you for sharing that. And I think that one thing that I would want listeners to this podcast to understand is if you're having anxiety to the point of panic attacks, and if you're having anxiety to the point where you're not able to do the normal things that you were able to do in your life, it is time to seek help. You do need to bring that up to your family practice doctor. That is something that, you know, there is help for. And so you absolutely need to talk to your doctor about that. You can get an appointment with your family doctor or call in, and they can either refer you to a psychiatric professional or a psychologist, or they will see you themselves to start off with. But absolutely, if you're at that place, and Rachel, I think you did a great job, you know, a couple symptoms is mild to moderate anxiety. But if you start to have panic attacks and your life isn't where you're able to do those things, that's when you call a doctor. That's when you get help, correct? Absolutely. And thank you, Charmaine, for that practical information. You know, I learned something just now. I think that that's probably one of the most practical ways and practical information I think I've ever heard on what to do in the event of a panic attack. I want to switch gears because when we talked about how we were going to have this conversation, we felt like what would really help a vast majority of people is to talk about the non-medication related treatments for anxiety. What could people do in their own homes to handle or deal with anxiety, or how can they handle maybe mild to moderate anxiety so that it doesn't move into that severe realm? And there's a lot of things. Rachel, you talk a lot with our patients about mindfulness and meditation. Talk to me a little bit about what those are and how do they relate to helping someone with perhaps mild anxiety?
Definitely. So this is my jam. Absolutely. I practice mindfulness. I practice meditation. They're absolutely fantastic when we're trying to calm down our sympathetic nervous system. So the part of us that's like, ah, crazy, warning, you know, it moves into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the relaxing part of us. So mindfulness and meditation are actually very different. Mindful mindfulness is when we're kind of bringing our awareness, our attention to one specific thing. So for example, mindful eating. There's a lot of research, a lot of studies regarding mindful eating that it can help with not only weight loss, but it just helps with, you know, aligning your mind, your body, your soul together. So, you know, taking a piece of food, examining it, feeling it, smelling it, you know, being mindful on just that one specific thing. And then you eat it, you chew it. What does it taste like? What does it sound like when you're chewing? What does it feel like? You know, really zoning in on that specific thing. Then with meditation, we're really trying to focus on not one thing, you know, letting your mind flow and then simply acknowledging when something comes in, being aware of it, but then letting it go. I just always picture a flowing ocean when it comes to meditation because it's just always in and out and very relaxing. So yeah, I think anybody else want to add on to those?
Rachel, I think that's so cool how you describe them. And absolutely, you know, we have our trauma-informed yoga therapy group here. So taking those two things into account, the mindfulness and meditation, what does that look like in practice with our folks? That's a fair question.
Yeah. So I love the trauma-informed yoga. Ever since we started it, the women just have been coming and we've had a good retention rate. So during yoga, we really practice during our yoga sequence, we really practice mindfulness. I'll have the women focus on any sensations that they're having in their bodies. When they feel something, bringing their awareness to that specific body part and just simply kind of examining it. You know, are you feeling any sensations, tingling, hot, cold feelings, any tension? You know, zoning in on that and asking yourselves, you know, what is that body part feeling right now? If you can think of anything that that body part needs, what would it be? You know, imagine yourself sending hearts to that specific part of your body to let it know that it's going to be okay. And then usually towards the end of trauma-informed yoga, we do a 10-minute guided meditation just to further relax. And so this is typically when, you know, I'll have calming music playing and I'll just take them through a guided meditation to help them practice, help them practice with being aware and being not aware. So it really relaxes them. They see a lot of benefits. They love coming. I had one client yesterday tell me, you need to have this 5 times a week. So they love it.
I love that. And I think that it's important. So I'm trying to make the connection. It's a trauma-informed yoga class. And so the people that it's targeted at have had trauma in their lives. The one thing that I know about our brains and about anything is that you have to practice things in order to be able to call on them. So my question is that why you use mindfulness and meditation as practical ways to help people with anxiety so that in the event of a situation, they have strengthened those abilities in their own selves so that they can use them? And is that one of the reasons or are there other reasons? So why mindfulness and meditation with trauma patients which have anxiety or with any other anxious person? That's my question.
Yeah. So with trauma, with anxiety, with any sort of, you know, mental illness, sometimes we have physical symptoms and sometimes we're not able to talk about it. It's tough to talk about it. And so with trauma-informed yoga, with mindfulness, with meditation, sometimes we need to focus on what our body is telling us before we actually speak about it. You know, so sometimes just focusing on specific body parts and what they're saying, what they're telling us, it kind of brings that awareness that, you know, this is what I've been struggling with all along. Sometimes our body lets us know, you know, what's going on before kind of our mind does.
Okay, so there's one reason, because I'm going to tally up the reasons why these things are going to help an anxious person. So what I hear you say is one reason that mindfulness and meditation can help us with anxiety is to figure out what's making us anxious maybe in the first place, or figure out the problem, meaning you have to slow down, you have to be mindful, and you have to be aware to even get to the root of what might be causing you to have this panic or these anxiety, these feelings of anxiety in the first place. Is that one reason that you think that this is very helpful?
Absolutely.
Charmaine, do you have another? What else about mindfulness and meditation would be practical and help anxiety?
Right. Yeah. So I think of Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, and all of his research is on how trauma is stored in our bodies. And his research is called The Body Keeps the Score. And essentially what we're saying is your body remembers what has happened to us. It remembers. So when we remember, we sort of have these physiological symptoms, as Rachel noted. And so maybe for some folks, they don't realize it, but they carry the stress in their jawline. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I'm tensed here, or their shoulders or neck. And then sometimes you don't realize that you sort of need this release until something sort of helps you to relax. Our bodies and our brains remember things that have happened to us. So when we are being very intentional, you know, I think that's kind of the common denominator with mindfulness and meditation. It's being intentional. So I'm intentionally sort of focusing my thoughts on a specific, something specific with myself. I think those are sort of one of the ways that we've released. We're mindful, and then we can sort of release where the trauma or stress or feelings of overwhelm or what have you is sort of stored in our bodies. The other thing I was thinking about is if you're home, something that we can engage in is guided meditation. So literally just Googling guided meditations, there's videos that'll pop up, and you can sort of relax and sort of go and walk through this meditation with this person who's walking you through it. I really greatly appreciate when we're sort of, as Rachel noted earlier, mindful of certain things. So if my brain sort of wanders off, because I think that's the thing with folks, right? They're like, I cannot focus for a whole 5 minutes. That's a long time to try to, you know, be still. We're not naturally like still people. We move. We've got things to do. So to be intentional and try to focus is sort of just being aware, where did my brain go to? And then maybe I need to, you know, think about that later. I wonder why it went there. But then I just kind of come back to this place. It's being intentional.
Thank you so much. If you're just joining us, we're glad that you are. My name is Tanya Andricks, and I'm from Crossing Healthcare. I'm joined by Rachel and Charmaine, both counselors at Crossing Healthcare, and we're talking about anxiety. And just to recap, we defined anxiety as feelings that are uncomfortable. It's like your thoughts racing, your mind's racing, but they're typically rooted in thoughts of the future, fear of. And so we're really focusing on that. We talked a lot about how do we decide what's mild, moderate, and severe anxiety, because we want to make sure anybody listening to our conversation today knows that if they're having severe anxiety, they need to call their doctor. They need to see a professional to get help for that. But there are a lot of practical things that we believe on our team that you can do to really help you with symptoms of anxiety. And so Rachel and Charmaine are joining us, and we're talking about things like mindfulness and meditation. Rachel, I want to go back to the yoga class, because I really am interested in this whole notion that the body keeps the score. And so that's why you take people who have trauma and anxiety through a yoga class. What kinds of physical symptoms do people often present with in their bodies when they're feeling anxiety? Meaning, what are you seeing in people with anxiety as it relates to physical symptoms or physical pains? And how have you seen yoga helping with that?
Yeah, so with physical symptoms, what I've seen with some of the patients who attend yoga for physical symptoms with anxiety, sweaty palms, you know, they'll notice if they're getting anxious during yoga, they're like, my palms are sweating. They'll notice, you know, rapid heartbeat. You know, my heart's pounding. or I feel out of breath. Even they'll feel kind of shaky. And so, you know, with yoga, I like to just have them bring their awareness to what their body's telling them. And in that moment, what does your body need right now? And I really try to have them focus on acknowledging these symptoms and being okay with it and not pushing it away, but bringing it closer so they can get to know it, so they can know, okay, this is a symptom I'm feeling and that's all right.
And do those symptoms oftentimes resolve within the time frame of the yoga class?
Absolutely. Usually every time I do yoga afterwards, all of my patients say, man, I really needed this today.
That's good to hear. What about stored pain, Charmaine? What about pain? You know, I think that oftentimes people with anxiety can also have some stored pain and physical pain. Is that something that you've seen in your professional career with trauma and with anxiety, that people often have, you know, unexplained pain, physical pain?
Yes, absolutely. And I think we oftentimes see this with unexplained stomach or gastro issues as well. I think this is also why it's so fantastic to be on an integrated team where you're working very closely with the medical providers and psychiatrists and things to that nature, because we can sort of collectively come together with the patient at the center. We understand that, okay, we've ruled out this medical issue and this medical issue, but we're noticing that this person is having, is complaining of ongoing stomach issues. That's something to be mindful of. And, you know, to recognize that there can be a correlation back to trauma. The other thing I think is important to note is that, you know, there's a saying that says maybe the hardest person to be with is ourselves, right? So, you know, we're the most challenging, likely, more than likely. But then the challenge with that is that oftentimes folks have learned to sort of survive with this separation from themselves. So clinically speaking, we might call that disassociating, where there's sort of this, you know, separation. We've seen that with trauma survivors who've experienced, maybe was the victim or survivor of sexual abuse. Oftentimes you hear them saying, you know, there was sort of this escape, there was this disconnection from their bodies in that moment. We know that that's survival. So to practice mindfulness and meditation, to kind of step back into myself, to be mindful of what's going on in my body and aware, to name it, to feel it, because frequently we don't want to feel it. Like, feelings is left, we're going to run right. Like, don't want to do that. Don't have time for that today. It could be an uncomfortable process. You know, Rachel, I've had supervision with Rachel, and we've sort of talked about some of those things. And when patients experience breakthroughs, when they say, wow, I felt like my stomach heat up a little bit when we were mindful of that section of my body or what have you. So I think it's sort of practicing connecting back with ourselves, sort of being one with ourselves again. And again, I think that requires us to be intentional, because it's really not like the first on our list usually.
Right. So really it's kind of the opposite of the symptoms of anxiety. So the symptoms of anxiety are physical symptoms, but the mental focus is what hasn't happened yet. It's sort of outside of ourselves. It's in the future. It's down the road. And sort of the opposite of that is being present in the here and now, not in the future, in our own bodies, feeling what is real and not what we're afraid of, because we bring that in and then we trigger all this. So really it's practicing the opposite of anxiety helps us then have less frequent problems with anxiety, correct? I think that it's powerful. And I think that obviously if life gets debilitating, you might need medication, but there's so much that can be done with mindfulness and meditation. I'd like to shift gears in the conversation now, because I always want to make sure that we're being practical. And so I wanted to shift gears and really talk about how to find meditation tools, how to find mindfulness tools, because I think that, you know, for many of us, we all have sort of an idea of this. I think that it's becoming more mainstream. I think there was a time when mindfulness and meditation and people who practice those things were sort of thought of as a little out there or a little whimsical. And now I think more and more people are seen as mainstream. And that's our goal for this conversation, is to just, you know, make this as matter of fact and normal and normalize this, because mindfulness and meditation are great practices. But where do you find resources, and what are there such thing as bad resources or problematic resources? You know, how would you direct someone who's never practiced mindfulness and meditation and is feeling symptoms of anxiety? Where would you have them start? You can go, Rachel.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think back of when I started, like how I started. I think I learned about mindfulness and meditation when I went to counseling. Mm-hmm. And my therapist gave me some practical ideas. Some of those ideas were very simple, things that I could do anytime throughout the day. Regarding mindfulness, washing my hands. You know, I know pandemic, we wash our hands all the time now, and that may not be something we want to focus on today. But for instance, eating, you know, eating a sandwich, being mindful of that. Going on a walk, being mindful of maybe the ground that you're walking on. How does it feel when your feet hit the floor, feet hit the ground? Other practical ways for meditation are, there's tons of apps that you can download on your phone, that you can download like on YouTube, that you can look up for meditation, even attending maybe a yoga class if you are able to. Those are just simple ways to begin practicing sort of mindfulness and meditation. Charmaine, I don't know if you want to add on to anything.
Yeah, no, I think those are all good. So I think when we going back to the basics here, deep breathing. What is deep breathing? Like, it's something that it's just not what we do all day, right? We're breathing to survive, to live. We've got things to do, right? We're busy. But being very intentional about sort of breathing. So inhaling through your nostrils, holding it, you know, for a couple of seconds, and then exhaling slowly through your mouth. One of the ways that we can practice with, I practice with kiddos and even adults, is sort of smelling the, you know, the flowers, smelling the flowers, breathing that in, and then, you know, maybe blowing out the birthday candles, which I don't think we'll go back to after COVID. Maybe we won't blow out birthday candles anymore. But that's one of the things that we can sort of do. The other thing is really grounding, and it's what you talked about, Rachel. Grounding is sort of coming back to this space. It's the opposite of disassociating. So feet planted on the ground. I mean, it's really something to be, you know, we kind of take the ground for granted. We know that it's there, right? But if our world was shaky, or if we were, or if an earthquake happened, it's very easy to sort of acknowledge that, oh, stability is nice, like to know that the ground is there. But, you know, feet planted on the ground. There's guided meditations, as you noted. And so YouTube is kind of cool, even with sitting in a chair and what that's like and feeling what that's like. Headspace is another app that I know lots of people have used and talked about and journaled with. And I always go back to other apps as well, like, you know, having a therapist in your pocket, like through Talkspace. But really being able to process in that moment in real time via phone or text with a counselor or a licensed therapist as well. There's resources now. So we really, it's going back to, we don't have to suffer in silence and we don't have to live in isolation. There's resources for us to reach out and kind of really help regulate our emotions.
So I want to reiterate, I think that there are a lot of resources. You know, certainly if you have access to the internet, Google searching mindfulness and meditation, you can find really great resources. If you have a smartphone, there are lots of apps. There's Calm, there's Headspace. Those are expensive. There is a free one called Insight Timer that I found, because, you know, oftentimes I make this recommendation to people, but not everyone wants to pay $10 a month for an app, right? And so there's one called Insight Timer. So those are mindfulness meditation apps. You can certainly find free things online, but two practices that you just described, Charmaine, that are free, you don't need an app for, that are absolutely helpful is breathing and deep breathing exercises and then grounding. And I'll just share something about myself. When I'm at work every day, when I come back from my lunch break, when I sit in back in my office chair, I do grounding, because from the morning you have everything that happens, and oftentimes your day gets hustle, hustle, bustle. And sometimes you almost feel like your day gets hijacked. I don't know if you ever feel that way in your work or at home. And so it's a way for me to whatever happened in the morning, not carry into my afternoon. And I started that habit years ago, and it just requires me to sit with both hands on my chair, plant my feet, and take a few deep breaths. I sometimes imagine roots growing out from my feet down into the earth, but that's just my own little technique. But grounding and breathing are absolutely free things. Insight Timer is a free app on your phone. You can go online and find things, but those are all resources. And at the end of the day, I hope that a takeaway from anyone who is listening to this conversation about anxiety is to know that these things should absolutely be tried, and there's no downside to trying them. We want to encourage anyone who's having feelings of panic or debilitating anxiety to get professional medical help, because those are diagnosed, those are real illnesses that need treated, that should be seen by a doctor so that you can get better. And we want people who have those kinds of symptoms of anxiety to get that help. But people who are maybe because of the pandemic or maybe because increased stress of the year 2020 that has now rolled into 2021 are just feeling symptoms of anxiety more frequently than not, these are techniques that really help. And Rachel incorporates them here in our clinic with our patients who have significant anxiety disorders. So they can help on the and that end of the spectrum, but they can help you early in very mild anxiety. And so I think that those things, I really hope that people can take away. Charmaine, what last thing would it be that you would comment if you could give one extra piece of advice to our listeners? What would it be on this topic around anxiety?
I hope what listeners are able to take away above all is that there's no shame. There's no shame in reaching out for support. There's no shame in acknowledging that, okay, yeah, no, that sounds a little bit like me. Yep. My thoughts are always going, and I'm frequently future focused, but not in a productive way. We can be sort of future focused in a productive way. I have goals, I have objectives. I'm going to get there by this time frame, and these are the action steps. Or I'm so future focused that, I'm struggling to be present in this moment, and maybe I'm sort of missing this moment. I think that's okay. What I want listeners to know is that this is incredibly common. And so I think it starts with, we've talked about this for the past few weeks, but sort of stepping out of the shame zone and stepping into being proactive. Nothing is nothing's accomplished when we're in the shame zone, right? So we sort of have to step into this place of, okay, now this is what I'm going to do about it. I think back on a patient years ago here at Crossing, and I greatly appreciated what he said to his wife in a couple's counseling session, and she was greatly struggling with shame and sort of this word of crazy and feeling normal. And he said, normal is a setting on a washing machine. I was like, yes, right, what is normal? So I have to figure out and find normalcy for myself, whatever that might mean. So some of the skills and the tools that we talked about today, every one of them might not be beneficial for everyone. But what can I take away? What's one thing sort of that I'm willing to take away from this conversation to maybe lead a healthier life?
Thank you, Charmaine. Rachel, I want to tag over to you. And if there was one thing that a listener to this session on anxiety and mindfulness and meditation could take away as practical, what would you say that should be?
That if you are experiencing feelings of anxiety, any sort of feelings of depression or trauma or anything, that there is hope. There is hope to manage it, to discover it, and that there's a lot of courage with looking at it.
Appreciate that, Rachel. I think that the other key takeaway that I loved that you said, Charmaine, was about depression being really rooted in things in the past and anxiety being rooted in fear of the future. So that's one way to tell the difference. That was a key takeaway. And then again, breathe and ground and find those apps on your phone and try some guided meditation. And last but not least, and Charmaine, I love this comment and I've heard you say it before. Normal is a setting on a washing machine. It's not a term that we should ever think should describe ourselves or anyone around us. So stay out of the shame zone. We hope that if you are feeling some symptoms of anxiety, some of the information that you heard here today can help you. And we're real grateful that you joined us in a conversation today about mental wellness. Thank you and be well.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.